This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
At Payne and Pendergast with you into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Man, good weekend coming up. We got Rockets OKC tonight. The Astros win yesterday. No Astros tonight because Minnesota is too stupid to put a roof on their stadium. They've got to leave that extra day open in case there's a snow out of their opener, which there wasn't, but the temperature was close to accommodating one. High, low 40s yesterday. Ugh.
I don't like seeing the guys with hoodies on.
No.
Caratini had a hoodie on. Who was the other? Was Brendan Rodgers the other one wearing a hoodie?
Brendan Rodgers had the thing where only like your nose and your eyes are poking out of it, like that.
Yeah.
The stocking thing over your face.
Yeah.
Joe Espada looked very comfortable. He had the ski cap on and the kind of the heavy. I like that heavy coat he had on. It's only usable like 2 weeks out of the year here in Houston, but I'm like, I would buy that. They had the orange sleeves and the blue kind of torso, and he had the shades on and a scarf. He looked comfy in that dugout.
Whatever Correa was wearing under his jersey, it made him look fat, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was
made him look like he had skinny legs with a fat torso.
What do you think of bearded Carlos? He's got a pretty heavy beard going right now.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I thought I don't know. It's like when it's, you know what it reminds me of? Greg Williams with his, the old defensive coordinator.
Defensive coordinator.
He's ultimate try hard trying to look like a badass.
Oh, yeah.
He had that dyed black goatee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
I felt like Carlos Correa. I was like, that's not you, man. I don't know. You're not a beard guy.
I like it. All right. We had Nick Caserio on yesterday. Texans EVP and GM. We had him on for a good long time. If you want to listen to the entire conversation, you can on the Payne and Pendergast podcast. You can listen to it on the Odyssey app. Good conversation, getting you ready for the draft. We did a lot of digging into some of the things that have happened so far this offseason with him. Let's start with the offensive line. We asked him yesterday, what are you? Clearly, they're trying to find something that didn't exist in that room last year. I think their behavior would indicate that. They've gotten rid of a few guys. They brought a lot of new guys in. What are you trying to find that wasn't? What are you trying to find that was missing in that O-line room last year?
No, there's never anything specific. I think what you try to do is after each season, you kind of take a step back, make an evaluation. All right, what happened? Is there anything that we feel that we need to do moving forward? And there's going to be change. In the Laramie situation, that was something that, you know, we weren't certainly intent on doing or that we were motivated to do. I think when we just looked at the situation, we felt that it was the opportunity in front of us that made sense. Washington had a need, and then we consummated the trade, and, you know, ultimately, we felt like that was the best decision for the Texans at that particular time. So we made, I would say, changes offensively from Coach Kaley to Coach Popovich. So from the coordinator to the offensive line. So that's kind of step one. How it all transpires and how it all sorts itself out, TBD.
All right, so that was Nick talking about the O-line. What's interesting, I love going back and listening to it a second time. What's interesting to me there is the outright said, like, the Laramie thing wasn't something we went out with intent to go do. You know, they didn't put Laramie Tunsil on a eBay trade block or anything like that. But what's interesting to me is that, okay, that, and I think Nick is open to a lot of things if you were to call him, but I think there are certain players that he would hang up pretty quickly if you even asked about a trade for. Like if you called asking about a trade for C.J. Stroud or Will Anderson or Derek Stingley Jr., it's a non-starter. Laramie Tunsil,
and if it was, or at the very least, even if he has a policy of listening to all trades, it would be a mega blockbuster crazy compensation trade.
There would be a first-round pick involved. There were no first-round picks involved in this trade. Like he was open to that Laramie conversation, obviously, because they consummated a trade that I think was, by all, you've pointed this out several times, by all accounts, the people who pay attention to draft charts and whatnot, and whatnot, when you add up what all these picks are worth, most people are like, okay, the compensation makes sense. What doesn't make sense to people is why you would trade your best pass protector in the first place for a line that protected C.J. Stroud poorly last year.
Well, and even the, you know, and the way he framed it, that it's not something that they were actively looking for, it's kind of, it can still hint at perhaps how they felt about him, the same way as like, hey, I wasn't looking to meet a woman at the bar that night, fall in love with her, and then tell my wife it's over. You know, like, okay, there's probably something going on between you and your wife that led to you being open to that scenario. You met a woman at the bar, go to the payphone, call her up, and like, honey, I'm trading you for a second and a fourth rounder.
That's right. That's Nick's open to a lot of things, and so. So Laramie gone, not just, you know, Nick said not just one thing. Seth, you asked him this, were there times it was a question you asked about just maybe not being on the same page in the offensive line room yesterday.
Yeah. Right? And I genuinely wasn't trying to pile on Bobby or anything like that, but the way that D'Amico has talked about the importance of having one voice in the O-line room, the importance of knowing how to go out and execute you want to instead of having to discuss, you know, how to do things, that was there as simple as, hey, the O-line coach, some of the players, and the offensive coordinator might have all just been seeing things through different filters or different lenses?
Yeah, I'm not going to speak for D'Amico, but, I mean, you know, there's always a lot of communication that takes place. It's never one particular thing. So in the end, going back to when D'Amico made the decision that he did to move on from Bobby, certainly was an easy decision. So I'd say the fact that Nick and Cole have some level of experience together, I mean, it always helps when any time that you have an opportunity to work with one another. Again, like we've won 20 games over the last 2 years. So like a lot of things that we were doing, you know, couldn't have been all that bad. So, but, you know, we're just trying to figure out like, all right, what's the best thing for the Texans? What do we think we got to do moving forward? I think we'll work through it here. We'll try to have a good off season, you know, try to get the players, let's say, in good condition. And then once we get to training camp, obviously we're going to have more information. We're going to have a better idea of where we are. And the whole goal is to just make sure that we're as prepared as we possibly can be for whoever the opponent is week one.
I think two things that he said there were interesting to me. One, emphasizing in my mind that it was D'Amico's decision to let go of Bobby Slowick.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, I think that's one, you know, maybe Caserio wanted Bobby Slowick gone a long time ago. I have no idea. But that's got to be a decision that the head coach makes. And D'Amico had to come to arrive at that on his own. But the other is, when Nick says it's multiple things, yeah, that checks out based on the fact that three of your starting offensive linemen from last year are gone. The offensive line coach is gone. Sounds like he was probably going to retire at some point anyway. Mm-hmm. And the offensive coordinator is gone. That's multiple things. Yeah. That's five key pieces from your O-line last year are completely gone. So it was as D'Amico had said at the combine, there needs to be a reset on the offensive line. They reset it about as much as you possibly can.
Yeah. I don't think this was a series of decisions that Nick was presented with that each made sense, and you happen to wind up with an O-line room that's completely overturned with coaching that's completely overhauled.
Yeah.
This feels like something they sat down and said, all right, this is the one part of our team that we need to do a complete overhaul. This is what kept, like Nick in that cut right there pointed out, he said, hey, look, we've won 10 games each of the last couple of years. It hasn't been all bad. No, you're exactly right, Nick. Most of it's been pretty good. If the offensive line was average last year, you might have been playing in an AFC title game. You know, you might have been seeded higher than fourth in the AFC. It might have been a two seed if you could have won games against Tennessee and the Jets, you know, held on to a lead against the Lions. And the offensive line is at the center of the failures in all these games. You know?
I was going over my notes from one of the games last year, just a week ago, and I can't remember which game it was, but my main takeaway was that, okay, we've got these injuries, we've got this other thing going on the team, and somehow the issue is this 100% completely healthy offensive line. This is the problem here in that particular game, and that you could say that about many points during the season. It used to drive me insane when I would see national analysts towards the end of last season say, well, you know, they've struggled on the offensive line, but they've had a lot of injuries. Like, what the hell are you talking about? No, they've been relatively healthy.
Yeah.
What on earth are you talking about?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether they're healthy or injured. They're awful.
Yeah. And that was a frustrating misconception. I think the other thing too, just you know, with respect to Nick and D'Amico making these moves, you know, an interview with him is not the time to go injecting our opinion into it. But what I would tell him if we had, you know, if it was a longer form where we were exchanging opinions about things, I would say, look. Most Texan fans are happy that you traded Laremy Tunsil. Most Texan fans are happy that you're tearing down the offensive line room and rebuilding it. Now, they're not happy that we have to go through a rebuild like this, but that's water under the bridge. Nick's done largely really good things as the GM here. Most Texan fans are happy that we have a new offensive coordinator and a new offensive line coach.
Most Texans fans were happy with the Laremy Tunsil trade. I think the counter to that is that I think most Texans fans are also skeptical of Nick's ability to put together a good offensive line.
Yes.
And I think there's been frustration that there hasn't been some corresponding wow moves after you got rid of Laremy Tunsil. Mm-hmm. And that's where we'll see what happens with the draft. And, you know, this time last year was when the Stephon Diggs trade happened.
Yeah.
It was post-free agency rush before the draft. There's still room for that. I'd be really surprised if the starting offensive line. I'll be somewhat surprised if the starting offensive line in September is made of completely guys who are on the roster right now.
Brandon Scott, when he was in for you earlier this week, proclaimed that he thinks the starting offensive line is in the building right now.
Yeah.
And it's five guys in the building right now. But I don't think that's a smoking hot take or anything like that.
No, and I don't think And it's totally feasible even if they draft a couple of offensive linemen.
Yes.
I think they brought in veteran players that you could totally feel comfortable with starting at day one. I'm more nervous about Jarrett Patterson or Juice Scruggs than I am most of the guys they brought in as free agents because they're veteran guys who are established players. Ed Ingram's the only one that you really that I'd probably be most nervous about. He was benched in Minnesota last year. But a lot of the other guys are just solid veteran players that they're not Pro Bowlers, but you can start them in the NFL.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. We'll get to more Nick Caserio in just a second. What's the likelihood of us being upset this time next year with the offensive line?
This time next year,
so we've got the 2025 season under our belts.
Let's say January of next year.
January.
Because this time next year, okay, maybe they do make aggressive moves.
Yeah.
If it goes as bad this year as it did last year on the offensive line, then you start to wonder whether C.J. Stroud wants to do that. If C.J. Stroud's just kind of like, no, hey, man, you know what? I'm comfortable with my deal. No, if they try to extend me right now, I'd say no, just because I want to just keep playing football. I'd start to get nervous.
Yeah, I would too.
So is the question, what are the odds?
What's the likelihood that we're upset with the offensive line, that we feel the same way next year that we feel this year?
I think that, for one, the offensive line, because I'm not trying to be delusional and you know think that I know that Nick Caley's going to be an awesome offensive coordinator or something. We have no way of knowing. We have zero clue whether he's going to be a good offensive coordinator or not. I do think just by virtue of the way I think he wants to operate, the things that he's talked about in his press conferences, I think they're going to be a more fundamentally sound offensive line. And if you take last year's offensive line, exact same humans, everything else, and just make them a fundamentally make them a play more fundamentally sound and give them a more clear plan for what they're supposed to be doing, then you're not as upset about the offensive line right now. A lot of it, I will 100% put a boatload of the blame on Bobby Slowick for the way the offensive line operated last year, partly by virtue of the fact that I don't think he had a clue about offensive line play and how to design a run game or how to execute a run game. So I think I'm optimistic that the O-line will be better this year, even without huge talent upgrades, just because last year they were playing like a bad high school team at times.
Yep, it was sloppy. Contract extensions. They've given one to Derek Stingley Jr., a big one. They gave a nice big extension for a 1 year to Danielle Hunter, $35.6 million. We know they got Nico Collins extended last year. We asked Nick Caserio yesterday, is it presumptuous to think you've basically given out the blueprint for Houston Texan players to get a contract extension?
Good player, good attitude. Go out there, be productive, work hard, put the team first, and you'll be rewarded. But I think when you look at the overall composition of the team and the mindset, and D'Amico has talked about this, what are the things that we're looking for? What do we prioritize? What a Houston Texan football player should look like or what we want it to look like? Understanding every player is different. Everyone has strengths. Everyone has areas that they can improve. We feel like we're pretty fortunate that we have a lot of good football players on this team, in this building. And, you know, those players, they earn what they receive. We don't give out anything. Like, this isn't like, okay, come in here and we're just going to give you, you get what you earn. And the contracts are the contracts. And every situation is going to be a little bit different.
I like that he led with good player. What's the key to getting a contract extension? Yeah, well, first, you got to be good at football.
Well, no, if you go back to the way that Bill O'Brien operated at times, I think he almost wanted to reward the effort almost with disregard to the actual product. And it's dangerous because you can have a team full of guys who do everything the right way, but if they're not actually good at football, then it's all for naught. So you have to be a little bit more choosy in rewarding not just the effort, but also the end result as well.
Yes.
So Nick Martin was the classic example. Okay, great. Great. He steals equipment from the weight room so he can work out at home. Awesome. But I'd like him to be a good center before you pay him like a top five center. Can you please do that?
Yeah, man. Dude, Nick Martin's name is the first one that popped into my head when you started talking there. I'm like, yeah, you get if you operate the way Bill O'Brien did, you get a team full of Nick Martins with a couple stars.
Yeah, the sweet spot is the guys who play the guys who work their asses off, and maybe they're not that talented, but they do everything that you want them to do. Those are the guys you can get at good discount deals. Those guys are the kind of guys that like to stick around. They like being on a team, you know.
They still
serve a role. It's just that you want to be able to retain those guys at the right price. You can't start rewarding the effort and not the result at the price of guys who deliver the results. You go broke real quick that way.
I think Nick and D'Amico are onto. I think they've got a really good philosophy and they're onto something with how to build this thing moving forward. Now it's going to get trickier when you got to pay Will Anderson and CJ Stroud. That's just math. It's going to get harder. Here's where I was going with this, Seth, is that I think Nick's got a methodology and he knows what the line is to draw. Unlike Bill O'Brien, who didn't know where the line was to draw and what constitutes a player worthy of an extension. I think Nick and D'Amico have a pretty good idea of that. Similarly, I think that they're comfortable with that layer of the roster you're talking about, that discount layer of the roster. I think they've created an environment here that's enticing to guys who are in that tier of player that they can come here, play well, especially on the defensive side of the football, and go somewhere else and get rewarded, or even, you know, in the case of a guy like Dalton Schultz, get rewarded by the Texans. You know, I think they've got a pretty good beat on what aisles to be shopping in for different things.
You know what we are, Sean?
What's that?
They've turned themselves into a queer eye for the straight guy. They're a guy that, just quite kind of a disheveled mess. Shows up in Houston for a while, and all of a sudden, like, he's got duvet covers and stuff. And he's the women find him more enticing.
When did he start to comb his hair and learn how to dress this way?
Did you see that? It looked like he trimmed his beard at least within the last 2 weeks.
That's the magnificent Gladstone looking at Eric Murray. Like, whoa, I've watched Eric Murray before, but this Eric Murray, Here's 3 years, $22 million, Eric Murray. Wow.
We need to get Nick to do one of those Z snaps when he comes. Yeah.
As McLean would say, not going to happen. Jalen Petrie is the player who I think is probably closest to, should be closest to getting an extension, if I had to guess. We asked Nick about a possible Jalen Petrie extension yesterday on the show.
Yeah, I'd say we're having conversations with a number of players. And, you know, we've talked about this. You guys kind of know how we operate. Mm-hmm. Like, we're pretty flexible and open-minded. Like, we don't have a finite, well, if, you know, we don't get it done by September 1st and it's off the table. I think at some point, for everybody's best interest, you might say, hey, look, let's try to figure this out, you know, over the next few weeks and or whenever. Don't really want to comment specifically on any individual discussions with any players, but I would say always open-minded to having a dialogue with the player and representatives and trying to figure out an agreement that everybody feels comfortable with, because the goal is for both entities and both parties to be happy with how it went. You don't want to have, we're not trying to quote-unquote win a negotiation. Yeah. We don't believe in that. That's not how we operate. You want something where the organization wins and the player feels valued and they feel like, you know, you've made them a priority. So, you know, we'll work through those things. But Jalen's been a good player. It's the day he walked in the building. He's had a significant impact on our program. That's the type of player that you'd like to have around here as long as possible. So we'll kind of see how all that works itself out.
I believe I believe everything Nick said right there, except at the very beginning where he said, we're having conversations with a number of players right now. I'm looking at the roster. I'm like, who else could you be possibly talking about an extension with right now?
It's not always a guy that's, you know, in his third year or going into his fourth year.
Yeah.
And this is perfect, because it also leads to the discussion about, all right, when you have this process of rewarding guys and extending them, et cetera, jealousy can creep in from other players.
Oh, yeah.
If they're not identified as one of those ones. So Malik Collins got a 2-year extension. And, you know, that wasn't on his rookie deal, but he got a 2-year extension in June of 2023.
Right.
Lo and behold, who saw that and started to get agitated?
Stephen Nelson.
Nelson was not happy about the fact that they had extended Malik Collins and that he didn't get his. So that got kind of ugly over an extended period of time.
That's a good point.
With Stephen Nelson. And without speaking about Stephen Nelson's situation individually, just from my perspective, like, I've been on teams where you can see a guy, and it's ugly. You'll see a guy get an extension on a team, and you can see the look of anger and, like, the scowl on the face of the dude who's jealous that he didn't get an extension.
You can pick the guy out right away, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they're open about it and will just be loudly blabbing about it. That's where it comes down to, you gotta try to stock the right kinds of dudes as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because at the very least, okay, there might be a guy that feels like, hey, wait a second, you guys need to pay me too. But then there's the next level of guys who will actively despise the guy who did get the extension.
Yeah.
And now, again, I'm not saying that's who Stephen Nelson was at all. I'm just saying from my own personal experience.
Yep.
Like, that's the murky area that there are hurt feelings. And as a coach and as a GM and everybody else, you got to be comfortable with a certain element of that. There's always going to be some dynamic with that in a locker room. You just got to be able to be sure that you're managing it and you don't have too many guys like that.
You think there's a Petrie extension coming this offseason? You had to guess. Total guess, obviously.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if the Texans try to, or at least, you know, approach them about it.
I definitely think that.
But I don't think it won't be for a jaw-dropping number.
Yeah.
I could see Jalen Petrie betting on himself.
Yes.
And thinking, like, hey, he was playing out of position for the first couple years. Last year it looked like, man, he'd found his niche, and then he gets injured. So I think the Texans, my gut would be that the Texans want to get him at a good, reasonable price, $10 million a year, something like that. And Jalen Petrie, I wouldn't think he was wrong at all for thinking, you know what, I think I've got more in me, and I want to just really go out and just play my ass off this year and see what happens.
I agree with everything you just said, that I could 100% see the Texans side of it. And we've seen that Nick Caserio with these extensions, you know, Nico Collins got done in May. Stingley's extension got done a week after the league year started, like a week after he was eligible for it, he got it.
Yeah.
You know, Danielle Hunter, you start to watch that edge rusher market go into the $40 million a year range, and I think it was shrewd business to jump in there and get him for another year at about $4 or $5 million less than where the market was going before Micah Parsons gets his deal done, whenever that happens. So there's only been a few of these. It's a small sample size, and the ones we're using as sort of the data point on this are Nico Collins, Derek Stingley Jr., and Danielle Hunter, but particularly Nico and Stingley, because those were draft picks of Nick Caserio. Both of those got done much earlier than most teams would be doing those deals. So So I think that's we'll see what happens with Petrie. Jalen Petrie is going to have a new teammate in the secondary this year. His name is C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday with us on C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
I would say specific to C.J., say Howie and I have a really good relationship. We've done a lot of deals together. You know, when those conversations take place, they honestly really don't take too long. But it's a relationship business in the end, and we're not afraid to talk to anybody. So, you know, even the situation going back to Kirk. So, you know, James and I didn't really know each other, haven't worked together. But, you know, we're pretty open-minded here. Like, we'll work with anybody. We'll kind of get kind of straight to the point. Hey, and just try to have some open dialogue. And that's part of the responsibility in the chair in which I sit, is you want to be open. You can't be and what's the worst the thing that somebody can say? It's no. Okay, mm-hmm. No problem. Then you move on to the next thing. So you never take it personally. But, you know, Howie and I have always had a lot of good discussions, a lot of good dialogue. We're not afraid to do deals. We kind of go back and forth. And this one happened to work itself out the way it did. CJ's been a good player. He's had a positive impact, a couple of different programs. It's been really productive with his opportunities. So that's all we care about, is when a player walks in the building, is just come in here, do the things that, you know, D'Amico asks of you as a player, be a good teammate, and go out there and play good football. So, you know, we think CJ can help us in the secondary, which is why we made the acquisition that we did.
I should have clarified. My question was about CJ Gardner-Johnson, but part of it was like, hey, how does a deal like that come about? You know, when the guy's about to get cut and you're able to kind of swoop in and make a trade, because Nick's done that now 3 times in the last 2 years with Joe Mixon, Christian Kirk, and now CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, and with it's an interesting one with the Eagles, because I think typically something like Kenyon Green. Kenyon Green's the kind of one where maybe you let some teams know that you're going to release him. This is the type of trade that usually happens. You let somebody know that you're going to release him, and then the team says, okay, well, listen, how about we give you a 6th-round pick for him?
Yeah.
So we don't have to try to get him in free agency or whatever.
Yep.
That's like what happened with, was it Tom Savage with the Falcons?
It was T.J. Yates.
That's right, T.J. Yates. They announced they were going to cut him, and then the Falcons came in. But then for the Eagles, instead of a draft pick, saying, no, we're actually going to give you this really good safety because we've got to clear out space for all these other contracts we're giving out. Yeah. It's unique. It's unique. And the biggest one thing I wonder with C.J. Gardner-Johnson is, he's a high-energy guy. He's got a lot of personality. He's not afraid to go after Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce on social media or in T-shirt form. People wonder, okay, does he kind of have a shelf life? Is he a guy that, hey, we love him, he produces, but I don't know. That's all I'm saying. I have zero clue. So there's a little bit of it feels too good to be true to it. I'm not buyer beware. He was very valuable for the Eagles. There's a little part of it that just still feels a little too good to be true.
I hear a little bit of that in the tone about the answers I've heard from people within the Texans about C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. He's a live wire.
Like, he's on his third team now.
He's a crazy kind of swarm. There's benevolent swarming, and then there's C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who's just a little crazy. You know, he's just he plays on the outer reaches of the dark side of the swarm, you know?
This would be my hope. Whatever it is, with his personality quirks and idiosyncrasies, whatever it might be. The most impressive displays of restraint I saw in the Super Bowl was when the Eagles would take Travis Kelce, who's known for getting away with antagonizing people and drawing personal fouls out of people. They antagonized the hell out of Travis Kelce. And one of those was after Travis Kelce got hit with a clean and legal hit, he got up trying to get in people's faces like he does, and C.J. Gardner-Johnson just stood there with his hands behind his back.
Hands behind his back is the key. hands behind his back.
Cook, but smirking at him.
Yes.
Like just trying to draw something from Travis
hands
Kelce.
Hands behind the back was the key.
That was, it was a very passive aggressive, like non-confrontation.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Okay, now I'm super stoked about him being on the Texans.
This is my dream for C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah.
Now that in football years, he's, how old is he, 28?
27.
27.
Yeah.
All right, that's like being in real life, maybe like a 36 or 37-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's going to be like Clint Eastwood's character in Unforgiven.
Okay.
Where, sure, he had a past. Sure, he may have killed women and children. But he's a different guy now, mm-hmm. okay? And he's still got that outlaw to him, mm-hmm. obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a restrained outlaw.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we really even want the restrained version of C.J. Gardner? I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't want the earlier version of Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven.
Yeah, probably
sounded
not.
Like a horrible person.
Probably not. Is this someone's asking on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line about a comparison of bringing in C.J. Gardner-Johnson with bringing in Stephon Diggs last year. Is this different than the Stephon Diggs situation?
Yeah, for a couple reasons. One, he's still not he's not as marquee a player as Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
And then two, I think you're adding a veteran player into a group that was already very promising and good. But isn't as, like, a safety is not the same impact as a wide receiver.
Definitely not that wide receiver either.
You're right. Or just like that, the position in general.
Sure.
So his ability to take the ball away and everything else, I think, can be a really great addition. But it's not a make it or break it. And it's on the side of the ball where they actually know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Last year, it was still an offense that showed promise in 2023, but wasn't a genuinely good offense.
Correct.
They were trying to use Stephon Diggs as one of the things that could really punctuate it and turn them into a good offense. So it's just there's a lot of different dynamics. I don't think it's more of a classic, okay, you got a guy in on a reasonable 2-year deal.
Yeah.
You gave up Kenyon Green for him.
Yeah.
You traded a second-round pick for Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
And redid his deal into a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
There's nothing even remotely close to these two.
If this texter were sitting in the room with us, and this is all the text says, is this different than Stephon Diggs? My follow-up would be, in what way? You know, like, asking.
No, I think, okay, and actually, in a lot of ways, he's probably talking about the personality side.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah,
right?
All right.
Yeah.
I don't remember reading about C.J. Gardner-Johnson having issues with his teammates.
No.
Yeah.
At all.
And I mean, you know, and obviously the epilogue to the Stephon Diggs was that he was a model teammate.
He was great.
And a model veteran leader.
Yep. Yeah. Text message. In Dungeons and Dragons terms, we just don't know if C.J. Gardner-Johnson is chaotic good or chaotic evil.
Oh, what is there? There's a chaotic play?
I guess.
You just don't know. Like, you're just throwing it out there and it can be good or it can
you,
be bad.
Have you ever, when you were a kid, did you ever play Dungeons and Dragons?
No. Remember, we talked about this a couple years ago, how I've always been curious. I'd like to get into it, but
yeah.
It feels like it would be a big time investment. One of our listeners invited you and I to some coffee house where they play.
Right.
A lot.
That's right. Okay.
We never followed through on it.
No, we should. That would be interesting to go play a little game of D&D with our listeners and see what that's all about. We're all about. We're not just
form to have somebody looking over your shoulder to help you make the right.
No, I would want to play. I actually played a little bit, like at the same age the kids in Stranger Things were at when they were playing it.
Yeah,
and I'm guessing like when we were kids in the 80s, in the 90s, that a lot of kids played it, and then some just stuck with it, and then others were like, it just got to be like too much for me, like the investment in all the books. I just never knew what the end game was in all
of
it. You
got to buy books?
There's books. Yeah, dude, it was I remember one Christmas, I asked for all the D&D books. My parents were like, wow, this is a lot of money for these books. Yeah.
If I were going to revisit one thing from my youth that I kind of just quit, like never tried or quit along the lines of Dungeons & Dragons, it would just be the simple Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
I think, you know what, I might just get a Rubik's Cube and just learn online how to solve it and everything. I don't need to break any records or anything, but I'd like to, you know what, I'd like to be the annoying guy that walks in and is like, oh, what's that, a Rubik's Cube? And then act like I haven't seen one in 10 years and just... And then,
yeah, like the way they saw... Did you ever get to where you could solve it or at least get one side of it or anything
Yeah, I remember, I don't know how many, like you get one or two sides and you feel like you conquered the world.
Yeah, I remember like I got the Rubik's Cube one year, spent a year completely frustrated, so my parents as a stocking stuffer the next year got the little manual on how to solve the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
So they were like, I guess they got tired
of me. Did you learn
how to... I did. I learned how to solve
the whole thing. So you learned how to solve it?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Not super fast like those people on TV do it, but I had to kind of look, and the corners are the key is what I remember. I couldn't do it today. It's not... That muscle memory's gone of being able to
But
do it,
it is. It's not like you have to be a super genius. You just got to be able to learn and practice the technique for...
Memorize sequences.
For
yeah.
Oh, you got to memorize stuff?
Yeah. Well, a little bit. I mean, yeah.
I just said Brendan Rodgers instead of Christian Walker.
You have to memorize stuff in so much as eventually you don't want to do it with the manual sitting right in front of you. You know what I mean? Like, that's
the manual says, can you remember the name of your favorite baseball team's second baseman? If not, don't buy this book.
Exactly.
Which is a pretty good sales pitch for most people. They'd be like, hell yeah. Oh, sure I can. I'll buy this book.
This is
yeah.
it? That's all I've got to do?
For me, it's a big barrier.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. All right, let's get to the mock draft injection, shall we? Mock draft injection time. And this one is one where we've seen we've seen this one mocked to the Texans quite a bit, and it's I don't know, more and more it's looking like this is who the guy might be. This is the guy who's leading Drew Doherty's mock draft roundup right now, so stay tuned. It's Maurice Jones-Drew mock draft, NFL.com, coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Thank you to the dozens of you who pointed out to me that the Astros don't play tonight. They're off tonight because Minnesota's stupid and has the possibility of snowouts for their opening day. So they've got to leave an empty day there for their opening series. And so the Astros get a day off in Minnesota. My prize pick spot, I just read, Seth. I talked about how I was going to use some Astros tonight in my prize picks lineup.
Yeah.
Several people. Thank you for listening to the spot, by the way, all you people. That's how advertising works. Now download the Prize Picks app and use my code 610. There is no Astros game for me to put into my lineup tonight, so thank you, all of you, for pointing that out to me.
No, I know, but you had been complaining about Minnesota not having an indoor stadium and the fact that they weren't playing on Friday just like 7 minutes before that.
I did, and I... Okay. It wasn't 7 minutes. It was when we were talking about the Astros, like an hour ago. But yeah, like it was, I forgot. And so thank you. I'm just thanking everybody for reminding me of that and telling people I will do a Prize Picks lineup still, even without the Astros playing tonight, okay? So there we go. Mock draft injection time. Let's do that. Maurice Jones-Drew, former NFL running back. He is working for the NFL Network now, and he's got his first mock draft out. Where have you been, Maurice Jones-Drew? The draft's in 3 weeks.
Yeah, you should be on your 18th mock draft.
Everybody else is on like version 9.0 or something right now.
Maurice Jones-Drew is usually good for some curiously against the grain takes.
Yeah,
that he stands by and they're informed and everything. He's not a wackadoodle about it.
Right.
But I'm curious to see exactly whether I'm going to call him like, hey, he's an ex-player, he knows what he's doing, or he's only got his job because he's an ex-player.
Yeah.
Where is he on the spectrum based on this one?
Well, we'll see. Let's find out, shall we? The Maurice Jones-Drew mock draft with the 25th overall pick in the Maurice Jones-Drew NFL.com mock draft. The Houston Texans select the same player that is the most drafted player to the Texans right now in the mocks. He's going with the crowd here, Seth.
Yeah.
Josh Simmons, offensive lineman, Ohio State University.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna accuse him of being he only has his job because he's an ex-player. That's where I'll choose you. Because I'm starting to get annoyed at all these Josh Simmons projections to the Texans for a couple reasons. One is he's coming off a torn patellar tendon, and you can look good in workouts and everything all you want. We talked to Nick Caserio yesterday about Trent Brown's torn patellar tendon and how they treat that and handle it. And a big part of it is being able to do all the testing to see exactly, you know, how the one leg is in terms of strength to the other leg and all of that. And a lot of it has to also come down to, all right, a guy has a hard workout, how does he respond 2 or 3 days later?
Mm-hmm.
Same as it is with pitchers. You know, Lance McCullers had a good outing in Sugar Land, but it's those next few days where you want to be sure there's no setbacks. I get really nervous about a torn patellar tendon and an offensive lineman. And then the other part of it with Josh Simmons is that I take with a grain of salt the various reports we've seen that, hey, he might have maturity concerns or things of that nature, because who knows, there's a lot of smoke this time of year. But for whatever it's worth, they certainly don't gush about him as a leader or anything the way they do about Ibuka, the wide receiver out of Ohio State. They certainly don't gush about him the way they do in Alabama about Tyler Booker, the guard. And I think the Texans really are, especially on the offensive line, going to be trying to be damn sure that they get the right kinds of guys in there.
Yeah.
So I'm skeptical. Now, again, maybe that's all just noise or whatever, but there is also an absence of gushing about his personality traits and whatever that doesn't seem like a Will Anderson type of dude.
Yeah.
So I'm skeptical that it'll be Josh Simmons.
Yeah, and yet there's 10 people saying Josh Simmons. I was listening to In the Loop yesterday. They had Brian Broaddus on, who works for our sister station up in Dallas. He's a former scout for the Packers. He was with the Packers when they won one of their Super Bowls. I don't know which one. Reggie called him a Super Bowl winning scout with the Packers. I'm not sure if it was the Aaron Rodgers or the Brett Favre Super Bowl, or maybe both. I really enjoyed listening to him yesterday. He's really good on the radio. He loves Josh Simmons. Holy crap, I probably should have gone and gotten the audio. I was listening to that while I was working out yesterday, and I'm going, man, like, let's go. Like, well, he really likes his film, you know?
Well, no, he is fluid.
Yeah.
He looks like a guy that you wonder why he didn't play defensive line. That he's that type of, he moves really, really well, and it's really easy to see the upside there. I don't know if he's got that same level of grittiness or toughness or whatever that embodies the swarm mentality, but the upside of him is very good. And he got better every year while he was at Ohio State, so he started off this year looking the best he's ever looked, but then got injured before he was able to face a lot of the really good competition. So I think that I think there are a lot of teams that are looking at him as like, okay, we might have some concerns about the injury, we might have concerns about other things, but getting him at 25 or 26 or 27 that's a good risk reward balance there, because he might actually be, when healthy, a top 10 caliber guy.
Who would you the Ohio State offensive lineman? Oh, by the way, Reggie's listening. Thank you. He was a scout during the Favre years back in the 90s. Brian Broaddus. It was a great segment. He was really good. You can find it on the Odyssey app on the In the Loop podcast. Josh Simmons or the other Ohio State offensive lineman that's been mocked to the Texans pretty frequently. Houston's own Donovan Jackson.
Bel Air High School, was it not?
Episcopal. Yeah. Episcopal High School.
Oh, Episcopal. So he's from Bel Air and he went to Episcopal.
Yep.
I like Donovan Jackson. And this is something I'll do, Sean. I'll be the brave one that stands up for this marginalized class of society.
With people.
The duck-footed athlete.
Oh, yeah.
Because
discriminated against all the time.
They don't even disguise it. They don't even speak in code words or anything. They just flat out say, like, I don't know, he's duck-footed. I believe a lot of times people, they see a guy who runs kind of duck-footed, and they think, well, he can't possibly be a good athlete. He tests out pretty well by offensive guard standards as an athlete. He played tackle and played tackle when he had to move out for Ohio State because of injury, and played it way better than a lot of people expected, but most teams look at him as a guard in the NFL. I honestly, when it comes to interior offensive and defensive linemen, being duck-footed can be a source of strength, if anything, because you just watch anybody do an incredibly heavy deadlift. You know, you got your toes pointed outwards a little bit, or at least most people do. It's a powerful position. He plays with a lot of power. I like him a lot. I think he's got a lot of swarm characteristics to him. As a run blocker, especially, like, he plays with a flat back. He does a lot of things that are hard to coach. And I think he's not an awesome athlete, and I think there's some people that think, yeah, he's a slam dunk first round guard. There's others that think, I don't know, maybe this guy's a third rounder. I'd be excited about his upside. I like the way he moves.
Yeah, CJ Stroud's duck footed. He's fine.
Why would you ever draft a duck footed athlete from Ohio State?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, CJ Stroud. Well, what did they say about CJ Stroud? Yeah, I don't know if he can run or not. He's just, something about him.
When he finally unleashed the beast in the postseason, he was basically Lamar Jackson. You couldn't tell the difference between C.J. Stroud. When did the Texans sign Lamar Jackson? That's what I said on that run that CJ had in the Chargers game where he was zipping past people like he was in the HOV lane and everybody else is stuck in rush hour traffic, man. Duck-footed? Whatever. Whatever.
It is, I know. The people, they just talk about it right out in the open.
Yeah, man.
With no actual, they don't cite any evidence or anything about the hazards of being a duck-footed athlete.
That's right.
Now, I do, like, I feel like for an edge rusher, I'd rather have him be pigeon-toed than duck-footed.
It's the opposite, yeah.
Interior, yeah. I like duck-footed over pigeon-toed.
I need you to become a scout someday and watch you sell that to the room. Like, guys,
we'll start talking about the ankle girth and everything.
Guys,
like that.
This is the torpedo bat of offensive line play. Duck-footedness. I would be listening to that speech.
Who was the quarterback that the tight ends coach said was...
Jeff Driscoll.
Driscoll, yeah.
I didn't even need you to get to the... That was like me hitting the buzzer on Family Feud 2 words into the question. Who was the tight ends coach that... Andy Bischoff. That was the name of the coach who said that Jeff Driscoll is more athletic than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, we want to talk about somebody who I'm convinced definitely reads way too much into 40 times.
Andy Bischoff? Like,
Because Jeff Driscoll was fast in certain capacities. It was his kryptonite was having to turn at all.
Yes.
Like, he was fast as hell, unless he has to turn at all.
His kryptonite was running while there were other individuals who were tasked with tackling him. Yes.
He had the agility of a freight train.
Let's see here. A lot of thoughts on Josh Simmons and the Texans taking an offensive lineman in the first round. How many people went to Simmons' birthday party? Find that out before drafting him. That's a draft day reference.
I don't watch draft day this weekend. It's been long enough.
Please do. Yeah.
All right.
or are you not going to? It sounded like you were about to, and then I got enthusiastic about it, and then
I just thought of somebody write something the other day about the part of draft day where apparently they aggressively trade up in the first round, and then start doing research on the player they traded up for.
It's totally
on draft
stupid.
Day.
Yes,
on draft day,
like the entire movie takes place on draft day. It's just,
and they're doing a lot of stuff that in the real world they would have done 3 months ago,
or there's a trade made later in the movie that would never happen, ever happen.
Yeah.
You need to watch it, and I'm gonna give you the warning label right now. It is totally dumb.
You got to enjoy it for what it is.
Yes. I know sometimes when things are illogical, that can frustrate you. This is an entire movie of things that are illogical. Like, it is dumb, makes no sense, but I think it is very well acted. The fact that it's actual NFL teams at the actual draft, like, is, you know, it's not like the movie.
Because they use the actual logos and everything. They didn't have to disguise it.
They filmed some of it at the draft. Guys sitting at their team's tables doing phone calls. Roger Goodell announces the picks.
Well, and Arian Foster is in it, too.
He's in it. He's one of the draftees. Yes. Yeah. I think if you can get over the stupidity, I don't know, text him. What do you guys, you listen every day. 713-572-4610. Do you think Seth will like the movie Draft Day? Plain and simple. Do you think he'll like it?
I can't. Oh, plus, now Brandy's got this thing where she won't shut up about Kevin Costner, which is bogus.
Does she know that he Me Too'd me? Does she know that?
Yeah, she knows that. Okay. She knows. I think, if anything, it's appealing to her. He's got a little bit of a rebellious side to him, a mischievous side.
He twisted my nipple on Radio Row for no reason.
What were we watching? What sporting event was Kevin Costner at recently? He was sitting next to the kid from Saturday Night Live.
Probably a football game, if I had to guess. If it was recently, if I had to guess,
must have been, maybe it was the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, maybe. Yeah.
And Brandy, like, out of nowhere, was like, "Wow, he looks good."
Sitting right next to you. She was sitting right next to you, and she went, Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's...
Sorry, I thought you meant, like, that I was sitting right next to Kevin Costner.
No. It was Brandy. It was Brandy just gushing about Kevin Costner. Were you like, hey, I'm right here, you know?
It's one of those things. It's where, like, if she were gushing about some 27-year-old dude or something, I'd be like, yeah, it's a good-looking kid or whatever. But Kevin Costner is 90, in that age group now. We're old enough now that it's conceivable that she would date a guy like Kevin Costner.
Yep. This is your problem, my friend.
Oof. The freaking hussy.
Okay. Well, then you need to watch Draft Day with Brandy, then.
Is he incompetent? Is he incompetent in it?
Yes. Yeah. I don't want to give it away.
Oh, but she's going to be defending all his moves.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear about on Monday. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Will Seth like draft day? Text in if he watches it. All right, to the Rockets we go. They play OKC tonight, the best team in basketball. The rebuild, it's not complete till you win a title, but it's obviously in the right direction now. They're the 2 seed. A great poll from Roosh Williams online yesterday. The funniest moment of the Rockets rebuild over the last few years. We'll give our choices coming up next.